हरि
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 63. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. King Dushmanta, who never discharged semen without a result, placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen, Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. Thereafter, in due course of time, Shakuntala gave birth to a son. In the forest, Kanvamuni performed all the ritualistic ceremonies concerning the newborn child. Later, the boy became so powerful that he would capture a lion and play with it. This is, you know, when he's small. We're not talking about fully grown. I think she went back to the palace when he was like 5 or 6. So this is like when he was, Mahabharata, when he was 3. He would catch lions, tigers, and play with them, tie them up to the tree, you know, so they don't run off. So they're still there when he comes back.
This is how Mahabharata that became attached to the deer.
No, it's no. This is, yes. This is Bharat Marsh that the Bharat Varsha is named after.
Couldn't
it
get another name?
Does it get another name? No. Means, like, what do you call it? Bharat of the Third? Okay. Shakuntala, the best of beautiful women, women.
Women.
English is so weird. Along with her son, whose strength was insurmountable and who was a partial expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, approached her husband, Dushmanta. When the king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an unembodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Footnote 29. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 20, Maharaj Dushmanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son. But because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everyone heard from the omen that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. The voice said, O Maharaj Dushmanta, a son actually belongs to his father, whereas the mother is only a container like the skin of a bellows. According to Vedic injunctions, the father is born as the son. Therefore, maintain your own son and do not insult Shakuntala. Srila Prabhupada comments, according to the Vedic injunction, Atma vai putra namasi, the father becomes the son. The mother is simply like a storekeeper, because the seed of the child is placed in the womb, but it is the father who is responsible for maintaining the son. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. Aham bija pradapita. Bhagavad Gita 14.4. And therefore, he is responsible for maintaining them. This is also confirmed in the Vedas. Eko bahunam yovididhati kaman. Although God is one, he maintains all living entities with their necessities for life. The living entities in different forms are sons of the Lord. And therefore, the Father, the Supreme Lord, supplies them food according to their different bodies. The small ant is supplied a grain of sugar, and the elephant is supplied tons of food. But everyone is able to eat. Therefore, there is no question of overpopulation, because the Father, Krishna, is fully opulent. There is no scarcity of food. And because there is no scarcity, the propaganda of overpopulation is only a myth. Actually, one suffers for want of food when material nature, under the order of the Father, refuses to supply him food. It is the living, if there's shortage of food, it's because Krishna made it that way. Because people aren't behaving in that, so then, you know, it's like going to bed without dinner, right? So then, that's the principle. Otherwise, there's so much there, they generally have to reduce or not grow because of the, you know, just there's so much of it, it would drop the price. So in the modern method, then opulence is gauged by who makes more money, rather than opulence meaning the general populace has more facility. So it's a different approach. I think that was one of the difficulties that came up with the farmers at first when the European community was created, so it was all one economic unit, that farmers were told not to grow stuff because other places were already growing it, and so if they grew it, then there'd be too much on the general market. Mm-hmm. Like that. Well, before they grew, it was sold locally, and the others grew there and it sold locally, but like that. So it's not that there's a shortage. They only say these things just because they have nothing better to talk about. Actually, it is the living entity's position that determines whether food will be supplied or not. When a diseased person is forbidden to eat, this does not mean that there is a scarcity of food. Rather, the diseased person requires the treatment of not being supplied with food. In Bhagavad Gita 7.10, the Lord also says, Bijam mam samabhutanam. I am the seed of all living entities. A particular type of seed is sown within the earth, and then a particular type of tree or plant comes out. So that's the point, is what seed is used, that's what you get. Right? So that means the mother is the field. So the father is the seed, the mother is the field. That's then, you define the child by that combination of the mother and the father. But the seed, what planted is, like say, you plant an eggplant. You plant the seed in the ground. What will grow? Eggplant. Now, if you have the soil that's proper for eggplant, you get very good eggplant. Right? You have soil that's not good for eggplant, then you get not very good eggplant. Right? So that's the whole point of, if it's not matched, it doesn't work out. Just like spinach grows in sand. Why? I don't know, but spinach grows in sand. So if it's clay, it won't grow. Even though clay has more nutrition, everything like that, spinach grows in sand. So that's the way it works. So technically they could take the Sahara and grow a lot of spinach.
But maybe it's a different kind of sand.
Yeah, it could be. But it means it has to be sandy soil. Like that. So it must be, there's something else other than just pure sand. There's got to be a little bit of something in there. But, you know, they could start on the edge, you know. It's like, So that's the whole point, is that if it's not matched, Brahman, that goes together. Brahman man, that's the seed. Brahman woman, that's the proper field. Right? Then you get the proper, that's why it says equal. Because people are looking at equal as, oh, it's about me. No, that's there. But the point is if it's not equal, then the child comes out strange. Right? Means if there's 1 degree difference, if it's equal, then you get exactly the same species. If there's 1 degree difference in anuloma, then you'll get whatever is the nature of the wife. Let's say Brahmin father, Kshatriya mother, you'll end up with a Kshatriya. But the problem is because it's a Brahmin seed, there'll be that there'll be that spirit. It'll have the nature of the mother, but this mood of the father. So that's not going to work out very well. But if it's 2 degrees, or it's anuloma, you know, 2 degrees or more, or pratiloma, it's a different species of life. So if the parents nowadays can't figure out their kids, that's because their kid is actually a different species than they are. You know, that's why they can't figure each other out. So this is the reality. That's why the Vedas makes this strong point. We think, oh, well, it's nice, it's this, but we have to be practical. It's like, what do you want? You know, that's what you get, right? You know, you need a family car, then you don't go buy your a La Ferrari, right? It's just, you know, two people sitting in there is already a problem, right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is according to what you want, that's what you buy. That's what you get. So according to the nature of what you're looking for, in life, that's what then the Vedic system is about. So that's why it's very strong on this point. So we'll think, oh, it's unnecessary. But no, this is actually the way it works. Then by that, then you get proper population. So it works very nicely. So Arjuna, the first thing he was worried about with the war was the Shankara that would happen afterwards, and then the destruction of the whole culture. And we do see that the Sun and Moon dynasty only lasted 28 generations after that. You know, it didn't last after that. And most of that wasn't very good. So it means it's a little bit there. It means that it wasn't in its glory like that. Otherwise, why did Lord Buddha have to come, right?
Marge, what would be the difference between spirit and character? Because it sounds like it's the same thing.
Yeah, no, that would be there. It's nature means what would be the interest or stuff like that. It means, like, let's say it's a Kshatriya field, so that means that kind of knowledge and that. But at the same time, is it would have technically be the other way around. They would have the Brahminical, intelligence and skills, but they would have the tendency or the mood, the nature to apply it through Kshatriya field. So that becomes a problem. Because the Brahmins actually aren't supposed to do Kshatriya things. Just like when you have the other way, the Sutta, then it's the opposite. The Kshatriyas aren't supposed to be doing the Brahminical things.
So nature is more general and the spirit is more specific.
Yes, it seems to be like that. But the whole point is because the field will determine how well something grows and is nourished in that. So that's why it matches that field.
Guna and karma?
Yeah, you could say like that. So the karma of the father, the guna of the mother, or the other way around, like that. But generally, it's as a point of here. So here it's meaning the seed in the field is more brought out as who does the child belong to. So here it's meaning the seed is what, the earth is sitting there, nothing will happen. But you put the seed, then that grows. So that means the earth is then just a vehicle for that seed growing. Now one could say is without the earth, the seed won't grow. But the point is yes, you need the two, but what will grow? Not more earth, that seed will grow. As we said, you know, if you plant the eggplant, you'll get eggplants. Does that make sense? Not that you put, earth on the eggplant and then you get more earth. If you put too much earth, yes, then you'll compost, yes. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is this making the point is therefore it's the father's duty to take care of the son. Does that make sense? So the son therefore goes with the father. Modern makes all kinds of weird things because the kids generally end up with the mother, then the mother ends up with the new guy. So according to that, then there that new guy's son, which is yes, but at the same time, it's not the main son. So then Manu recommends is that when he talks about inheritance, it should be from his own father. Like that. But it can be from this other point. That's the point, is that when you get down into these rules because of Shankara and that, and because of breakup of the marriages, that's when you start getting weird stuff. You have to deal with all kinds of strange stuff. Well, the modern, that's considered normal. But in the Vedic, then you have to know the specific, who the child belongs to. Because otherwise it says, no, it's my son. And the other one says, no, it's my son. It says, no, who's married to the lady? Whoever's married to the lady, it's his son. right? The modern thing. That, and also by this, then it goes like this, because you can say that, but the point is if the marriage doesn't break, then the mother will always be married to the father. But technically, the son actually belongs to the father. So if they're going to break them up, the son should be awarded to the father, not the mother. Like that. Because the seed is his. Right? Does that make sense? But if it's someone else's wife, that means, but then that means, because the field belongs to that other person, that means that son belongs to whoever is the husband of the woman. So mano makes it much more straightforward. Does that all make sense?
Yeah. Modern is based on the break of the law. Whoever breaks the law, he loses the property or the
place. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. So that means they had to do something. But here it's about seed and field. Like that, so it makes it. But the main point is why this comes up at this point, because Shakuntala makes the point that he being the father, it's his duty to take care of the son. Right? That's his business. So she brings that point up like that. She gives all kinds of moral instruction here about the different things. That, you know, someone who's not married, then they're just taken, you know, they're not taken seriously on the social level. But as soon as someone's married, immediately they're part of the community, they're considered respected, mature, all these different things like that. So she makes all these different things, and that, and then having done that, then pointing out how therefore he should be manifesting these qualities. Like that. And so he doesn't. And then the voice then says all this.
Okay. Yes. This is very close to the modern scenario. They have a Gandharva relationship,
yeah.
This, that, and then he's gone, she's with the kid, and then she comes and he says, I don't know you.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we don't have that voice coming from
you. Yes. Yeah.
So that's the difficulty.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, if the lady is half demigod, then you might get the voice. So.
Yeah.
Shakuntala is half. That's the final point she makes before she walks out, is that actually in here I don't need to deal in all that, you know, because I don't, you know, you're dealing in this way as if I'm something lower, just some lady coming along. Says, but I'm half demigod. You're just full human, so I'm senior to you. So I don't need to take this from you. And so then she walks out. Then the voice comes.
And then she comes back.
Yeah. That was the whole point. Because then it's explained why he did this. He explains it right in the court. Because you know, if he doesn't, then he's got a problem. So this thing that he sent here, then he's, what Prabhupada's saying, he said that in the court. Okay. The mother resembles the earth, and when a particular type of seed is sown by the father, a particular type of body takes birth. Right? So that means, so that would be that kind of body, but at the same time, is then you're going to get that other, the nature of the mother, right? For the boy, the nature of the mother, but you're going to have the body and that mood of the father. So that's going to be the problem. So if they match, it comes out really good. If they don't match, then it can get wild, especially the greater the distance in nature. Like that.
So that explained the Mataji in the morning, she asked, how come, you know, good parents, bad kids, or, you know,
yeah,
strange parents, good, you know, devotee kids, and like that, because the gap is too big.
Yeah, so you end up with Shankara and stuff like that. So then, because of that, that's why it goes the other. Also, when you mix species, you can, the Garuda Purana mentions, you'll get something generally either quite, it'll be extreme, quite exceptional, or quite bad. You generally never get just run of the mill. That's also why Shankara is dangerous.
But species, they're all human in that case.
But we're talking Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they're different species.
Hmm.
Like that. So you're getting something else. You mix these, then you get a third species.
Hmm.
So that's why it's so. Because the father and mother are already having trouble because they're two different species. Then the son or the child is the third species. You know, and nowadays that third species sometimes literally means third species. You know, their daughter comes dressed like a boy, or their boy comes in dressed like a girl, or yeah, and we won't even get into the other, how you say, 55 different alternatives. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, 54, I mentioned two, right? Or the 56. So. Is that? Yeah.
From the technical point, the son belongs to the father. And the mother is just a field.
Yes.
And then we say that from the consciousness, they should be 50-50 influence.
Yes.
Not fair.
Yeah, but that's the consciousness. But they're just saying, in other words, this is who should be maintaining. Because even in the modern, the lady goes off with the kids, but it's expected that the father will take care. You understand? Because that's the point, is he has to take care. That's the point that's made here.
Mm-hmm.
His son. Like that. She's just, as I mentioned here, the vehicle for the manifestation of that. So he has to take care. So even if they say, no, it's my son, I take my son, but they still, this law of Manu, they still follow that, well, actually, it's the father's because he has to pay. Otherwise, if you really wanted to make it equal, then the father could get the kid and the wife should pay.
I think they have it in some European countries.
Yeah, of course. European will definitely go for that. Northern European, no? Okay. Yeah, I doubt the Italians are doing that.
So if women have the equal rights, so they can do the same thing?
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, so it's such a thing.
Let them pay.
Yeah, so it's such a thing. But, yeah, but it's against the nature, but... Everyone talks it because it's more fun. I mean, so it starts, so as long as it's an issue and that has that intellectual value to it, then there'll be push. But once it's established, people will see it doesn't work. And then, but no one will repeal it because then it's not being up to date and modern. So they'll just, it'll fade away and go into whatever else it goes into. So, yeah, that's the difficulty. Okay. The voice continued, O King Dushmanta, he who discharges semen is the actual father, and his son saves him from the custody of Yamaraj. You are the actual procreator of this child. Indeed, Shakuntala is speaking the truth. Because right? He was just saying, you know, he doesn't know her, she's lying. She's just, you know, how you say, you know, basically speaking, just a gold digger, right? You know, so, like that. But then it's pointed out, no, no, it's not like that. Srila Prabhupada writes, upon hearing the omen, Maharaj Dushmanta accepted his wife and child according to the Vedic Smriti. Pun namno narakad yasmat pitaram trayate sutaha. Tasmat putra iti proktas swayam eva swayam bhuva. Because the son delivers his father from punishment in the hell called put, the son is called putra. Right? Put means hell and tra means to. To liberate, yes. Like mantra. So mantra means to liberate the mind. According to this principle, when there's a disagreement between the father and mother, it is the father, not the mother, who is delivered by the son. But if the wife is faithful and firmly adherent to her husband, then the father is delivered, the mother is also delivered. Consequently, there is no such thing as divorce in the Vedic literature. A wife is always trained to be chaste and faithful to her husband, for this helps her achieve deliverance from any abominable material condition. Right? We see even in the modern is that, let's say that there is the husband and wife are married and they have their circle of friends. Now they get divorced, but whoever's within that circle of friends, that you know, those two individuals are off limit as a partner. Right? Because the point is that, as Prabhupada points this out, and from Manu, is that the man and the woman, when they make that commitment, they're, as for that life, they are connected to each other. Even if they break up and go their own direction, there's still that connection. They will consider that person is mine to not be with. So therefore, their friends can't be with them. Does that make sense? It's a subtle point, but part of Malecha culture. May not make sense, but I said. Yes.
We see even among the devotees, what you described, it's not happening because within the community there are so many things, and it's like, you know, just...
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, because they don't know, they don't this and that, because they don't even know how to... But the thing is we say community, but how community is it? How often do those individuals go to other people's houses, have meals, have this, that? Who are breaking these rules that we're saying? Because the point is that these two are together, and then they break up, and then one of their good friends marries the other person. Do they go over for dinner? No. So that's what we're saying. That's why these things aren't done. Because Manu says there's a connection. There'll be a discomfiture with that. Animals, they can get on with it. They couldn't care less. But the humans, then they'll go. So that's the thing, is that same liberal proposition that allows that these rules aren't followed is the same sensitivity that also will be disturbed by not following them. Right? So they're speculative enough to break the rule, but sensitive enough to be disturbed by it. So that's why that middle always has the most difficulty. You know, so it can be said, yes, that, oh, but it's going on, but yes. Remember, I mentioned before, one day I was sitting with all the kids, and they were, something came up, and I said, are you, so you're connected with this one and that? They all started laughing. And I said, you know, what's so, you know, funny? And then one of the kids starts to explain, well, that one, he's actually, you know, like this one. My mother's married to his father, and so actually then he's my brother, but the things like that. But then they broke again, and that's that, and this one's with this one, and that one's with that one, and pointing out, so this one's now this and that, like that. He was just going on. They were all just laughing. And it's just totally insane. While the parents are all thinking, yes, you know, it's all good and we're doing the thing. And they don't know their kids think it's a joke. Kids actually think it's a joke. That, you know, this is, you know, and then it's a matter of, okay, how long will this last? You know, cause, and I think one of them even said is, hey, any of these guys could become, you know, brothers or sisters, you know. It's like, you know, they're about, you know, how about when will they break up, you know, like that. And then, you know, like, so they was kind of like them for, you know, what to... like that, you know, but the parents are all thinking, no, you know, yeah, you know, so that's the illusion.
The kid, Krishna Maharaj also made one joke that somebody invited him for the marriage, and it was the fifth marriage.
Oh.
And he said, sorry, I can't make it for this one, I'll come for the next.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. And how did they respond? How did they respond to that? Yeah, we won't be able to make her this one, but you know, definitely for the next one. That was.
Maharaj, regarding the previous point, so Manu gives the rules and regulations for different relationships to create rasa and types.
Yes.
So if it's break, this relationship is break, then this parties, they cannot take another relationship, like friends or whatever, or servant or master.
Means who already in one relationship. Yeah. It'll be hard to do another. That you have, see, it's supposed to be amongst that kind of middle class intellectual that they can, you know, get along and they don't care and this and that. But it'll be more of a show.
It's not possible.
Yeah, especially when they see things are going nicer. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was bad with them and it's bad with this other, then that you can handle. But if the other person, they're getting on and they're really good, then what does that mean? That means that person was all right. So then it was. Then they'll start to doubt. Well, I was the one that couldn't make it work, because they're making it work very nice. You know. So that's why these things just aren't advisable. I mean, people do it. It's all part of the, you know, whole scene. But you know, I say, Only Woody Allen makes it look like it works out nicely. But in reality, nobody really appreciates it. It's practical. It's all about relationship. These are just the natural relationships, how you deal, how you... like that. Then it all works. So that's why then one is very careful about that. Does that make sense? So that's why it's there. People don't care about these things, go ahead. But then the problem is then they get all the complicated difficulties that come up by breaking these rules. You don't break the rules, things are very straightforward. You break the rules, then it becomes complicated. Right? So that's why it says it's complicated. Right? Because it's this whole thing of all these different, you know, situations colliding with each other. Does that sound like sense? You know. Yeah. Consequently, there is no such thing as divorce in the Vedic literature. A wife is always trained to be chaste and faithful to her husband, for this helps her achieve deliverance from any abominable material condition. This verse clearly says, Putro Nayati Naradeva Yama Kshaya. The son saves his father from the custody of Yamaraj. It never says, Putro Nayati Mataram. The son saves his mother. The seed-giving father is delivered, not the storekeeper mother. Consequently, husband and wife should not separate under any condition. For if they have a child whom they raise to be a Vaishnava, he can save both the mother and father from the custody of Yamaraj and punishment in hellish life. Right? So that's the idea. That connection is there. It works very nice. They separate off, then you never know what you're going to get. So, okay. Yes?
I think between the devotees, this point seems to be irrelevant because, you know, we practice our own life, so we're not really worried about all those.
That's the thing, but the problem is they're not worried about the other aspects of it either.
Yeah.
So they're just not worried. So I mean, the main point that at this point, then if they can remember Krishna and not forget, then everything will work out. So as long as they're not distracted by not following these things, so then, you know, the personal and social things don't work so well. As long as they can remember Krishna throughout that, then it'll work. You know, but you know, as time goes, then you'll see the proper following of these things, and then there'll be good example and everything, and then it'll be easier for people to see the advantage of. Because even devotees don't follow these things; they're generally needs and desires and anxieties are in line with the benefits you would get by following it. They want that security. They want where you feel that you're part of something, you're needed. You know, there's some validity to your position. All these things people want, but they don't know how to go about it, you know, which is the simplest form, because then you can explain and they can try. Or those who have their own idea, that's more difficult. And then you have the ones that think that the Vedic can't give any of that because, you know, they have their definitions and all that, and the Vedic doesn't follow all that nicely. So then they have the most difficulty, though they're going to be the last one to explain it, to express it. I remember once we had, sometimes those who don't expect, we sometimes discuss the masculine and feminine principle. And there's those individuals that won't accept it, but they'll say, but my life's going on fine. Just check back a few years later, then you'll see the reality. It wasn't, but their ego is such that they can't admit it. So you have those kind of scenarios. So those who are innocent, then you can explain to them because they're looking, they want to know. But those who think they know, then generally you can't actually, they can't absorb it. After a long, long time, like that, then they may catch 10 years, 20 years. And then they come back and say, okay, yeah, this was. But then that's so much time wasted. So that's the idea of the Vedic, is that at an early age one comes into the Grihastha Ashram, then one goes through it nicely, you know, solid, focused, committed, and then one comes out of it early. Like that. So that's the idea. Well, we tend to put everything back a little bit. You know,
as we see here, Srila Prabhupada is very straightforward.
Yes, yes.
But outside of an Indian community, you know, in ISKCON, the divorce rate is higher than outside.
Yes, yes. Because these things aren't discussed. What is there, what it works, how it works. They're just never discussed. These are topics that just aren't brought up. You know, it may come up in the verse, and then it's kind of like, you know, hemmed and hawed. Either it'll be finessed, or it'll be one of those hellfire and brimstone classes, you know, like that, you know. So that never gets anywhere. I mean, the brahmacharis get fired up, but nobody else gets anything from it. So the difficulty comes, it's not actually something that's addressed. It means if I take something from a modern scholar on family relationships and all that, and then run a seminar on that using modern styles of didactics, then it'll be, you know, appreciated, but most likely nothing to use or do anything with. But the Vedic, the thing is, you have to cut through the doubts, the misgivings and all that, that they even accept that I could be happy following this. And then if you get to there, then it's good. But back in the 80s, it would take 3 days, all day, just arguing until it got through. Right? And so that was then, when there was a little bit more, you know, that what Prabhupada's saying is good. And that would take 3 days of, I mean, straight, they not accepting anything. I mean, argue. So I remember I started a Grihastha Sangha. Took 3 days to get him to even, we didn't, I think, get off the first page. You know, it's just like arguing like that. And so then, finally after 3 days, then, oh, okay, now it's okay. So that was then. So now, the modern wasn't accepted. It was just they were conditioned by it. But now it's like they're conditioned and accepting it. So then, whether you could get anywhere is another thing. Yeah. But it's already given. Prabhupada says he's given the structure. We simply have to fill it in. And we're thinking, no, we have to create the structure. No, we can't create the structure. We're conditioned. How we can make a structure? Because in any case, the structures don't last. Over here, they fall down. In the West, they knock them down. You know. But in any case, they're going down. So it's just, if it's accepted, then you can start moving forward, then you can start figuring out how to apply it. But generally, it's either against or how not following is, you know, one or the other, like that. Verses 23 to 34, the activities of Maharaj Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushmanta. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Maharaj Dushmanta passed away from this earth, his son became the emperor of the world, the proprietor of the seven islands. He is referred to as a partial representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this world. Maharaj Bharata, the son of Dushmanta, had the mark of Lord Krishna's disc on the palm of his right hand, and he had the mark of a lotus whirl on the soles of his feet. By worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a grand ritualistic ceremony, he became the emperor and master of the entire world. Then, under the priesthood of Mamateya, Bhrigumuni, he performed 55 horse sacrifices on the bank of the Ganges, beginning from its mouth and ending at its source, and 78 horse sacrifices on the bank of the Jamuna, beginning from the confluence at Prayag and ending at the source. He established a sacrificial fire on an excellent site, and he distributed great wealth to the Brahmanas. Indeed, he distributed so many cows that each of thousands of Brahmanas had one badva, 13,084 as his share. So not even 10,000 cows, so 13,084. Bharat, the son of Maharsh Dushmanta, bound 3,300 horses for those sacrifices, and thus he astonished all other kings. He surpassed even the opulence of the demigods, for he achieved the supreme spiritual master, Hari. When Maharaj Bharat performed the sacrifice known as Nasnara, or a sacrifice in the place known as Nasnara, he gave in charity 14 lakhs of excellent elephants with white tusks and black bodies, completely covered with golden ornaments, as one cannot approach the heavenly planets simply by the strength of his arms. For who can touch the heavenly planets with his hands? One cannot imitate the wonderful activities of Maharaj Bharata. No one could perform such activities in the past, nor will anyone be able to do so in the future, right? Because he has that element of being, how did he word it? A partial representation of the Supreme Lord. Doesn't say specifically, but one would get that idea. But so therefore he could do such great things because of that empowerment. So it hasn't been done before this, it won't be done after this. When Maharaj Bharata was on tour, he defeated or killed all the Kiratas, Hunas, Yavanas, Poundras, Kankas, Kashas, Shakas, and the kings who were opposed to the Vedic principles of Brahminical culture. Formerly, after conquering the demigods, all the demons had taken shelter in the lower planetary system known as Rasatala, and had brought all the wives and daughters of the demigods there also. Maharaj Bharat, however, rescued all those women, along with their associates, from the clutches of the demons, and he returned them to the demigods. Right, so the women, they come with their maidservants and, you know, all their friends and everything like that. So you're talking about huge entourage like that. Maharaj Bharata provided all necessities for his subjects, both on this earth and in the heavenly planets, for 27,000 years. He circulated his orders and distributed his soldiers in all directions. As the ruler of the entire universe, Emperor Bharata had the opulences of a great kingdom and unconquerable soldiers. His sons and family had seemed to him to be his entire life. But finally he thought of all this as an impediment to spiritual advancement, and therefore he ceased from enjoying it. O King Parikit, Maharaj Bharata had three pleasing wives, who were daughters of the king of Vidarbha. When all three of them bore children who did not resemble the king, these wives thought that he would consider them unfaithful queens and reject them, and therefore they killed their own sons.
We don't hear in the Bhagavatam that the powerful Kshatriyas, they practice spiritual life, you know, throughout the Grihastha life. And then at a certain point, they just, you know, drop everything, go to the forest, and then intensely, you know, practice.
Yes.
So is that...
No, they're practicing all along. It's just that they're devotees, but then as kings, the occupational side and the character in which they do that is brought out. Because the Grihastha ashram has already been described in other places.
Yeah.
So this then is describing the specialness of their position as kings. Because that's a description as the dynasty of the sun and moon. Mm-hmm. So it's about, you know, the kingness of them. But we see is that in the Bhagavatam, then the ones who are brought out are those ones who, their whole life they're devotees, and then at the end of life, then they take it more seriously. Right? Because being a king, getting involved in all that, then you won't have as much time for hearing and chanting as if you know, moved on to Vanaprastha.
Yeah.
So that's why when it comes to the point where they've done their duties and there's someone to take charge of the kingdom, then they leave. Right? So that's the whole point. So then they go into, you could say, Brahminical activities. Well, Brahmins, then they'll give up their, how you say, the varna occupation of a Brahmin, but the ashram stays. So that's what the Kshatriyas go over to that. Everybody else goes over to that. So the Grihasthas move into that. So that's just one continuous line. What they're doing is the Brahmacharya, then it's Grihastha, then that's continuous. Vanaprastha, sannyas, the Brahminical aspect. But as a Grihastha, then they may take on the occupation of Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, according to their nature. So it's always there, but then you just see it manifesting at this point.
Because it seems to be the most difficult part for the Grihasthas is to be focused on both things, the Grihastha part and the sadhana part.
Yes.
So some do this better, some do, but to combine both, that's rare.
Yes, but that's what sadhana is. It means that practice. Because one has to be able to balance the two. Because it's the occupation, the family, the sadhana. All that must be seen together. But if you see with the proper understanding, then you see them all in connection with Krishna. So then it makes it easier. But it's not that seeing Krishna at work is not more distracting than seeing him in the deity form and while chanting your japa or doing kirtan. So the indirect is just as viable for Krishna consciousness, just it's more trouble. While you could get the same effect by not doing that. That's the whole point. In a sense, I could be Krishna conscious by sitting here and chanting japa or going out and organizing these big things and this and that. So the point is, since it's just part of Grihastha life, then it is seen that at some point doing that is given up for just engaging in the direct activities. So now if you're arranging big things for Krishna and it's just directly like that, it's not, you know, part of the occupation. You know, you're not getting any benefit from that, you know, like that, from monetary benefit as an occupation. Then in that case, then you're able to carry on the devotional. But there comes a point where even that you don't want to do. Manu makes that point. At some point it comes where someone is, you know, has done enough rituals, done enough of all these things, and then they just move on to just direct sadhana.
So that is Sarva Dharma Parikrama.
Yeah, so that's the, but it's not that you can't do that before. That's where you see the mentality and the activity matching there. But at any time before, we see, like with Priyavrata, it's described very nicely. Like those kings in the 5th and 6th canto, it's described very nicely how they were fully Krishna conscious while they were doing all their duties. So then they're functioning on Sarvadharma Parityaja. Well, before that we saw that there were kings doing, but it was more on the platform of the Kanistha and Madhura. But there you saw then how even the Uttama, he's functioning there. So it can be done. It's just more difficult. Is that makes sense? You know, it's just, but seeing it all connected to Krishna, then you get that spiritual benefit, so there's no problem. So that's why then it's according to the desire and need of the individual. They situate themselves and in that position engage in the duties that are from that position, but in connection to Krishna. Yes. Both. The point is as you're working on it, then it will become easier to view it in that way. And so then naturally then that renunciation will come up. That's the whole point. Is that, but as mentioned before, it was a previous chapter in Yayati. Well, it says that you have to voluntarily give it up. So you mean you have to make that commitment, I'm giving this up, and voluntarily give it up. Because otherwise the material energy is always providing opportunity. Right? You know, generally when you want it, you don't get it. When you don't want it, then it's there. So you have to voluntarily give it up. And so that there, then, by Krishna's grace, then the things work nicely.
It seems
But kings, everything's intense because it was the opposite before they were kings. They were a brahmachari in the ashram just like any other kid in the ashram. There's no special treatment because they're the king's son. Right? It means everybody's trained in according to their ability and capacity. And so then they all go through the same activities, everything like that. So they grew up in that way. So that's why it's easy for them to go back to that. Does that make sense? Because it's the same lifestyle. Just now someone doesn't have to tell you to do it. Now you see the value in it, do it yourself.
Can we say that as much opulence they had on this side, as much they will have to renounce?
They just have a little bit, so the difference between their, you know, really intense, involved grihastha life and their vanaprastha is not much difference, you know. So went from the 5 dhotis back down to their 2 dhotis, So yes, but for kshatriyas, they like it to be intense. So that's just the way they like it, that it's, you know, they have nothing, then they have everything, then they have nothing. This is for them, that's fun. That's just the way it is. Verses 35 to 39, the Maruts give Bharadwaj to Maharaj Bharata. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the king, his attempt for progeny frustrated in this way, performed a sacrifice named Marut Stoma to get a son. The demigods known as the Maruts, being fully satisfied with him, then presented him a son named Bharadwaj. When the demigod named Brihaspati was attracted by his brother's wife, Mamata, who at that time was pregnant, he desired to have sexual relations with her. The son within her womb forbade this, but Brihaspati cursed him and forcibly discharged semen into the womb of Mamata.
Is Brihaspati the priest of the demigod? That's what it says, right?
But no, it says when the demigod named Brihaspati. Because he's counted in that group. Mm-hmm. That's why in the previous one it was mentioning about how you have to be careful. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to verse 36. Who is Bharadwaj? This verse explains this. Brihaspati desired sex with Mamata, the wife of his brother Utatya. When the child in the womb, shouting, forbade him, since there was no space for 2 children there, Brihaspati cursed him in anger, become blind. He then, by force, impregnated her. I guess by being blind, you can't see the space, so you won't stop complaining. But otherwise, then. Srila Prabhupada elaborates, the sex impulse is so strong in this material world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar, wanted to have a sexual relationship with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of the higher demigods. So what to speak of human society? The sex impulse is so strong that it can agitate even a learned person like Brihaspati. So it is Brihaspati. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Mamata very much feared being forsaken by her husband for giving birth to an illegitimate son, and therefore she considered giving up the child. But then the demigods solved the problem by enunciating a name for the child. Srila Prabhupada comments. According to Vedic scripture, whenever a child is born, there are some ceremonies known as Jatakarma and Namakarana, in which learned Brahmins, immediately after the birth of the child, make a horoscope according to astrological calculations. But the child to which Mamata gave birth was begotten by Brihaspati irreligiously. For although Mamata was the wife of Utya, Brihaspati made her pregnant by force. Therefore, Brihaspati became Bharta. According to Vedic culture, a wife is considered the property of her husband, and a son born by illicit sex is called Dvaja. The common word still current in Hindu society for such a son is Dogla, which refers to a son not begotten by the husband of his mother. In such a situation, it is difficult to give the child a name according to proper regulative principles. Mamata, therefore, was perplexed, but the demigods gave the child the appropriate name, Bharadvaj, which indicated that the child born illegitimately should be maintained by both Mamata and Brihaspati. Right, so he's a dvaj. So, Bharadvaj. So he's a dvaj. Yes.
But this is again like when you mentioned about Mamata is a field, and she, and the
but I mean, she has to take care when he's small. It's not that because he's the father, as soon as the kid's born, the kid father walks off with the kid. I mean, she has to be involved.
Yeah, but the son belongs to Utatya, right? Not to Brihaspati. And why the demigods say that Brihaspati and Mamata should maintain?
Basically, in here, then, is there going to be an argument over who the child belongs to? Is Brihaspati's brother really going to be into this child? No. So, or is not Bharadvaj, Brihaspati, he's, I say, demanding the child. Right? Yes, so he's demanding the child, and Utatya is wanting the child. So therefore, then, whoever owns the field gets the child.
What about the second child? The blind one?
That one is going with his father. But, you know, so that rule is there for working those things out. See, it makes it easy. There's a purpose behind the rule. Understand the purpose, then variations in the rule become easy. Don't understand the purpose, then it's always going to be an anxiety. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so Bharta, so Bharadvaj. Okay, son born by, he's Dvaj, and he becomes Bharta, so Bharadvaj. Okay. Brihaspati said to Mamata, "You foolish woman, although this child is born from the wife of one man through the semen discharged by another, you should maintain him." Upon hearing this, Mamata replied, "O Brihaspati, you maintain him." After speaking in this way, Brihaspati and Mamata both left. That the child was known as Bharadvaj. So it ended up that nobody maintained him. Her parent was as, "You made the kid, I didn't want him. Therefore, you know, you take care of the kid." You know, and his point is, "No, but you had the kid, you take care." So they both ended up not taking care. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Brihaspati said to Mamata, who is going away, leaving the child, "O fool, you should maintain this child." Mamata replies, "But I fear my husband." Brihaspati said, "Though he is born from the semen of another man in your womb, though he is twice born, he is born from both of us. He is your child. Therefore, you should not fear your husband." Mamata replies, "O Brihaspati, you should maintain him, because he was born wrongly from two fathers. By force you have produced this child in me, though I was unwilling. He is your son, not mine. Because both the mother and father went away, he was called Bharadvaj. Please maintain the son produced by two fathers." Okay. Another version is Yad Dukat. The mother and father left in sorrow on giving up their son. So in either way, so he ends up as Bharadvaj.
Another that he suffers.
Yeah, so that's why all these things aren't there, because then the children are the ones that has the problem. But it works out.
Like that.
Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, although encouraged by the demigods to maintain the child, Mamata considered him useless because of his illicit birth, and therefore she left him. Consequently, the demigods known as the Maruts maintained the child, and when Maharaj Bharata was disappointed for want of a child, this child was given to him as his son. Srila Prabhupada comments, from this verse it is understood that those who are ejected from the higher planetary system are given a chance to take birth in the most exalted families in this planet Earth. Yeah, because that's what it mentions in Gita. After being there in the heavenly planets, then they take birth in the, and the, you know, the, you're generally your high grade families here. Conclusion. According to Vedic injunctions, the father is born as the son, because the seed of the child is placed in the mother's womb, but it is the father who is responsible for maintaining the son. Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. Aham bija prada pita. And therefore he's responsible for maintaining them. The small ant is supplied a grain of sugar, and the elephant is supplied tons of food, but everyone is able to eat. He who discharges semen is the actual father, and his son saves him from the custody of Yamaraj. Because the son delivers his father from punishment in the hell called Put, the son is called Putra. According to the Vedic Smriti, when there is a disagreement between the father and mother, it is the father, not the mother, who is delivered by the son. But if the wife is faithful and firmly adherent to her husband, when the father is delivered, the mother is also delivered. Consequently, there is no such thing as divorce in the Vedic literature. A wife is always trained to be chaste and faithful to her husband, for this helps her achieve a deliverance from any abominable material condition. This verse clearly says, Putro nayati naradeva yama kshayat. The son saves his father from the custody of Yamaraj. It never says, Putro nayati mataram. The son saves his mother. Consequently, husband and wife should not separate under any condition, for if they have a child whom they raise to be a Vaishnava, he can save both the father and mother from the custody of Yamaraj and punishment in hellish life. Nigamana. Good. Chapter 21. The Dynasty of Bharata, Pratigya. A pandit or learned person perceives the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being. Sixth purport. Because he never distinguishes between one living being and another. This is the true vision of equality, although it has now become fashionable to give preference to the so-called Daridra Narayana or poor Narayana. Ranti Dev had no reason to give preference to any one person. Rather, he saw everyone as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one who has actually realized that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart, and that every living being is part of the Lord, does not make any distinction between the Brahmana and the Shudra. Such a person sees all living beings equally and treats them equally without discrimination. That doesn't mean he doesn't follow the etiquettes that go along with the positions, or doesn't talk according to, use as a medium of discussion, the points that are of interest to the to whatever is the conditioning. But it doesn't mean that they value one and not the other. It means all living entities are valued as possible, you know, to be engaged in, as part and parcel of Krishna, and to be engaged in his service. Does that make sense? Adhyaya Prakashika. This 21st chapter describes the dynasty born from Maharaj Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushmanta, and it also describes the glories of Ranti Deva. Ajamida and others. The son of Bharadwaj was Manu, and Manu's sons were Brihatkshatra, Jaya, Mahavirya, Nara and Garga. Of these five, Nara had a son named Sankriti, who had two sons named Guru and Ranti Dev. As an exalted devotee, Ranti Dev saw every living entity in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he completely engaged his mind, his words, and his very self in the service of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Ranti Dev was so exalted that he would sometimes give away his food in charity, and he and his family would fast. Once, after Ranti Dev spent 48 days fasting, not even drinking water, excellent food made with ghee was brought to him. But when he was about to eat it, a Brahmin guest appeared. Ranti Dev therefore did not eat the food, but immediately offered a portion of it to the Brahmin. When the Brahmin left and Ranti Dev was about to eat the remnants of the food, a Shudra appeared. Ranti Dev therefore divided the remnants between the Shudra and himself. Again, when he was about to eat the remnants of the food, another guest appeared. Ranti Dev therefore gave the rest of the food to the new guest and was about to content himself with drinking water to quench his thirst. But this was also precluded, for a thirsty guest came and Ranti Dev gave him the water. This was all ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to glorify his devotee and show how tolerant a devotee is in rendering service to the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being extremely pleased with Ranti Dev, entrusted him with very confidential service. The special power to render the most confidential service is entrusted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to a pure devotee, not to ordinary devotees. Garga, the son of Bharadwaj, had a son named Shini, and Shini's son was Gargya. Although Gargya was a Kshatriya by birth, his sons became Brahmins. The son of Mahavirya was Durikshaya, whose sons were of a Kshatriya king. They also achieved the position of Brahmanas. The son of Brihat Kshatra constructed the city of Hastinapur and was known as Hasti. His sons were Ajamida, Dvimida, and Purumida. From Ajamida came Priyameda and other Brahmanas, and also a son named Brihadishu. The son's grandsons and further descendants of Brihadishu were Brihadhanu, Brihat Kaya, Jayadratha, Vishada, and Sienajit. From Sienajit came four sons, Ruchirashva, Drihadhanu, Kasya, and Vatsa. From Ruchirashva came a son named Para, whose sons were Prithusena and Nipa. And from Nipa came 100 sons. Another son of Nipa was Brahmadatta. From Brahmadatta came Vishwakshena. From Vishwakshena, Udakshena. And from Udakshena, Balata. The son of Dvimita was Yavinara, and from Yavinara came many sons and grandsons, such as Kirtiman, Satyadriti, Dritanemi, Suparshva, Sumati, Sanatiman, Kriti, Nipa, Udgrahyudha, Kshemya, Suvirya, Ripunjaya, and Bahurata. Purumidha had no sons. But Ajamida, in addition to his other sons, had a son named Nila, whose son was Shanti. The descendants of Shanti were Sushanti, Puruja, Arka, Barmyasva. Barmyasva had five sons, one of whom, Mudgala, begot a dynasty of Brahmins. Mudgala had twins, a son, Devodasa, and a daughter, Ahalya. From Ahalya, by her husband, Gotama, Sanatana was born. The son of Sanatana was Satyadriti, and his son was Sharadvan. Sharadvan's son was known as Kripa, and Sharadvan's daughter, known as Kripi, became the wife of Dronacharya. Okay, so now we're getting close. Sloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 18, the glories of King Ranti Dev. 19 to 36, the descendants of Maharaj Bharata. 1 to 18, the glories of King Ranti Dev. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, because Bharadvaj was delivered by the Marut demigods, he was known as Vitata. The son of Vitata was Manyu, and from Manyu came five sons, Brihad Kshatra, Jaya, Mahavirya, Nara, and Garga. Of these fives, the one known as Nara had a son named Sankriti. O Maharaj Parikit, descendant of Pandu, Sankriti had two sons named Guru and Ranti Dev. Ranti Dev is famous in both this world and the next, for he is glorified not only in human society, but also in the society of the demigods. Ranti Dev never endeavored to earn anything. He would enjoy whatever he got by the arrangement of providence. But when guests came, he would give them everything. Thus he underwent considerable suffering, along with the members of his family. Indeed, he and his family members shivered for want of food and water. Yet Ranti Dev always remained sober. Once, after fasting for 48 days, in the morning, Ranti Dev received from water and some foodstuffs made with milk and ghee. But when he and his family were about to eat, a Brahmana guest arrived. Because Ranti Dev perceived the presence of the Supreme Godhead everywhere and in every living entity, he received the guest with faith and respect and gave him a share of the food. The Brahmana guest ate his share and then went away. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 6. Ranti Dev perceived the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being. But he never thought that because the Supreme Lord was present in every living being must be God, nor did he distinguish between one living being and another. He perceived the presence of the Lord both in the Brahmana and in the Chandala. This is the true vision of equality, as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 5.18. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihastini. Shuni chaiva shopake cha panditas samadarshinaha. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater, outcast. A pandita, or learned person, perceives the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being. Therefore, although it has now become fashionable to give preference to the so-called Daridra Narayana or Poor Narayana, Rantideva had no reason to give preference to any one person. The idea that because Narayana is present in the heart of one who is Daridra or poor, the poor man should be called Daridra Narayana is a wrong conception. By such logic, because the Lord is present within the hearts of dogs and hogs, the dogs and hogs would also be Narayana. One should not mistakenly think that Rantideva subscribed to this view. Rather, he saw everyone as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari Sambandhi Vastuna. It is not that everyone is the Supreme God, right? So that's the difference, because much of the time you see this becomes misunderstood in general Hindu society, because they think that because of that presence of God, then everybody is God. Right? If God's all-pervading, then everything is God. So they don't make a distinction. So that's what Prabhupada is talking about here. It means the Lord is in everyone's heart, therefore you don't distinguish. They're all parts and parcel of the Lord.
So this Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, they don't discriminate. That's why they put it all together and they sing it's all one.
Yes, that would be... Yeah, they don't see a distinction. Because ultimately, the people who say that, it's all Brahman.
Yes.
So these other two are just forms of Brahman, so they don't really... Yeah, so that they have that lower understanding, and it's polluted because they don't accept... See, someone who would... Someone who was actually a Brahmavadi knew about Paramatma and Bhagavan, then they would deal with the higher level because they would see the difference in the taste. Mm-hmm. But these, they talk about Brahman but don't actually have a taste in Brahman, so they're not actually nicely situated. And so they make these two distinctions. Yes, you would say that.
So then the Hindus, when they say that Narayan is present in everyone's heart and then they give respect to everybody, this is still on the level of pranamaya, right?
It just depends upon how they're doing. If they're respecting everyone because the Lord's in their heart and they see everyone as part and parcel, no, then that's on at least Vijnanamaya. If they're following the duties, it means, yeah, that is on Vijnanamaya. So we're talking about Vijnanamaya to Anandamaya here, this understanding. That's the actual understanding. Now, what they're working with, then who knows what they're working with? You know, like that. It's just some mishmash of.
Is it still
there? Yeah, it's there. It means it's less because people are distracted. You know, but you still see those who are still interested or identify themselves as Hindus. This will still be quite popular. So even those who are, you know, devotees or, you know, like worship Vishnu or Ramachandra or like this, they can be easily distracted by these things because that's the ultimate. But, you know, they prefer worshiping the Lord in this form, which is encouraged because that's, you know, it's seen as karma yoga, so that's good for the masses because they can't do these highly elevated stuff that the, you know, the renunciates are engaged in. So it's encouraged. So they kind of go with everything. That's why when we come along, then they're cool with us also. You know. But then the point is by association, then they can take up proper Krishna consciousness.
Sometimes I actually met such a person. I was visiting one doctor. There was this a Prabhu who was a writer, but he was Vrijabhasa. And then he was very, very enthusiastically, very kind of firmly speaking about Krishna, speaking about Prabhupada, speaking this, that, and then his conclusion is, so I'm God, and like all of us, we're like we're parts of the Lord, but we are God, and this was his conclusion. And we're kind of trying, I was trying to argue somehow, we had a conversation, and he was pleased with, like, with the point, but his conclusion was very firm, so I was wondering, how should we properly, like...
I mean, it's just, then you just take their point. Prabhupada uses that if you have people like that. Then it's, yes, we're God, we're small God. 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair God. And then Krishna, he's God, he's unlimited. So, yes, everything's God because everything's Brahman. But at the same time, there is gradations within the Brahman. So we see it all as Brahman, but we have to know that there's a difference. Because if you can't tell the difference, then invite the person over for lunch. You know, bring out a huge amount of food. I mean, just ridiculously amount of food. And then, you know, take a pair of tweezers, get one grain of rice and bring it over and put it on their plate. And they say, what's this? And you say, this is prasad. Right? And then you see how well they stick to their philosophy. Devotees who do that stuff all the time. They meet somebody on the street, total Mayavadi, it's all one, it doesn't matter, it says, give me your wallet. And then they just take everything out of it and then give it back to him. It says, so you're, I am you and you are me, and but the money stays with me. Right? They don't get into the we're all together part, right? So it's just, you know, if it's all one, then you have it, I have it, it doesn't matter. It's, your money's my money, and so I'm taking it. And then if they're really stubborn, they have to let it go. And then they'd have to agree and have a proper discussion. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. That's smart. Says he should have asked for the car keys.
I mean, imagine they don't have cars.
That's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Prabhupada would use that one. Yes, we're all God, but we're small God, and Krishna is big God. So. And small will never become big.
It's presented as bhakti, as devotion, but at the same time...
It's just the medium they like using, but it's actually ultimately impersonal. That's the difficulty. That's what you can find that a lot in the... Those who are more on the karma side, and, you know, they're sentimental, they'll go that way. And then the other side then is just dry and intellectual. So most people are on the sentimental side. So then we can preach through programs and they get benefit. Because the other side, they're not interested in us coming and doing programs. Yes.
So this particular verse, is it talking about Paramatma realization?
Yeah, you would say like that. It can be higher, but it'd be like that. But you get the same thing. Means even if it's Brahman realization, means that you see everything as transcendental. So you see all the living entities as part of Brahman. So you're going to deal with them all the same because they're all of the same nature. Gita says this, when you understand all living entities are the same nature, then that's understanding the mode of goodness. Where you think there's a difference is in the kind of souls. Mm-hmm. That's mode of passion. So that's the problem. And this Tattvavad philosophy is actually a mode of passion. They don't catch it. It can't be proper otherwise. They're thinking the souls are different, like that. And mode of ignorance, they can't tell what's the soul. They think the body's the soul, and you know, like this and that. So they can't really tell. Mm-hmm. That's
It is not that.
Hmm?
It is not that agreement.
Oh, we didn't do that? Okay. It is not that everyone is the Supreme Godhead. Such a theory, which is propounded by the Mayavad philosophy, is always misleading, and Ranti Deva would never have accepted it. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thereafter, having divided the remaining food with his relatives, Ranti Deva was just about to eat his own share when a Shudra guest arrived. Seeing the Shudra in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Rantidev gave him also a share of the food. When the Shudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, "O king, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat." With great respect, King Rantidev offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs, who had come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained, and there was only enough to satisfy one person. But when the king was just about to drink it, a chandala appeared and said, "O king, although I am low-born, kindly give me some drinking water." Aggrieved at hearing the pitiable words of the poor fatigued chandala, Maharaj Rantidev spoke the following nectarian words. Footnote 30. Srila Prabhupada comments. Maharaj Rantidev's words were like amrita or nectar, and therefore, aside from rendering bodily service to an aggrieved person, by his words alone the king could save the life of anyone who might hear him. Okay, so just inspire and all that, just how nicely it's said, that's the culture. So it's much more effective like that. The culture is used, people are inspired. Right? You do the right activity, they're inspired. So all that together works. I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only want to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf, so that they may be freed from suffering. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Maharaj Rantidev said, "I shall remain among the suffering beings and take the suffering due to them. I alone should experience the suffering of all jivas. I can tolerate my suffering, but I cannot tolerate the suffering of others." Srila Prabhupada elaborates. Vasudeva Dutta made a similar statement to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, requesting the Lord to liberate all living entities in his presence. Vasudeva Dutta submitted that if they were unfit to be liberated, he himself would take all their sinful reactions and suffer personally so that the Lord might deliver them. A Vaishnava is therefore described as being paradukha dukhi, very much aggrieved by the sufferings of others. As such, a Vaishnava engages in activities for the real welfare of human society. Okay, so that's the actual bit. Free people from suffering means bring them to the transcendental position. Right? Because they're saying, "I'll take on all the suffering," so they can be liberated, they can go back to Godhead. Right? So for devotees, that's what it means. They don't mean that it's all emerged in Brahman. Right? So it's not that, "Oh, I'll take all the suffering so then they can all enjoy nicely," right? Like that. No, it means that they'll go back to Godhead. So that's the mentality of the devotees, is to work for the actual welfare. Because these others are just temporary welfare, because if they're not done in connection to Krishna, they're a waste of time. That's all. Right? Nice waste of time by material standards, but still a waste of time.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.